This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Live Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell, and certainly of vital interest to other heritages, other ways of life, other peoples around the world. Because the truth is, all freedom-loving people today have a common enemy. And that enemy is the globalist establishment that wants to dissolve all individual heritages, all individual nations, languages, and cultures into this obscene monstrosity called world government and the so-called global village. I think, obviously, we should try to avoid war in every way possible, but these globalists are, in fact, warmongers, and they will use any means by which to achieve their goals. Right now, they're trying to wash the world in blood. They're calling it a clash of civilizations, but it's a clash basically created and driven by the Zionist problem in the Middle East. The Zionist problem in that Jewish supremacists have come in and taken over Palestinian land, treated Palestinians worse than dogs, killed them, suppressed them, tortured them, and the world doesn't necessarily agree with what's happening there, but there's so much influence by the Jewish supremacists in media and government around the world that we have basically a world turning a blind eye as to what's happening to the Palestinian people. In America, we have gotten ourselves up to our neck in this war in Iraq, which is a war not for the interest of the United States, not for the well-being of ourselves and our children, as the framers of the Constitution would say, for our posterity, but a war basically being fought for Israel. It is a war for Israel and not the United States of America. You know, I often talk about the conservatives and how they're wrong in this particular conflict, and it's not so much the true conservatives, but the neocons, which have advocated this war. The neocons, of course, are, quote, former, unquote, Trotskyites, and they're the same ones who've opened the borders of the United States of America. They're the same ones who've turned a blind eye to affirmative action, the same ones who've pushed for the destruction of our educational system in our schools, but the same ones that support racially supremacist Israel with every bit of American tax dollar and military know-how known to man. We have a situation where the Palestinians and other Middle Easterners hate America, not because they hate our democracy. Again, that was one of the big lies. But, you know, when you control the media, when you control NBC, ABC, CBS, when you control the Washington Post and the New York Times and Newsweek and Time Magazine and U.S. News and World Report and The Nation and all the rest of them, you can go ahead and you can say, yeah, they attacked us because they hated our freedoms. That was about the biggest lie. In fact, when the American people heard that lie after 9/11, that should have made all of them sit straight back up in their chairs and say, what in the hell is going on here? The attack that took place on September 11 had nothing to do with whether or not we're a democracy or a dictatorship. It had nothing to do with our freedom. The motivations are clear. Even the 9/11 report itself has shown that the motivation of these hijackers was primarily the fact that the United States has supported the aims and objectives, the strategy, the strategic interests of Israel in the Middle East, and has been a aider and a better in the crimes that have been committed against the Palestinian people and many other people in the Middle East. Ladies and gentlemen, I am an American, and I'm proud of the fact that, you know, I have American lineage and heritage. But let me tell you something. The policies right now in Iraq, they're not the policies of the United States of America. They're not the policies of our forefathers. This globalism, our forefathers wouldn't have dreamt about getting into a war overseas against a nation that had not attacked us and imposed no threat to us. They would not have dreamt to let a foreign nation basically control the foreign policy of the United States of America and control our press, restrict our freedoms here at home. They would have not have dreamt these things. And they certainly would not have dreamt a policy where America now is engaging in wholesale torture and the wholesale use of things such as poison gas. Now, there's a conflict about whether or not white phosphorus is a poison gas. You know, as you know, poison gases have been outlawed by the Geneva Convention and other international treaties for many, many years. And America has been a signer and a signatory of those treaties. Well, what happens with white phosphorus? When they shoot out white phosphorus and they explode it, it goes into very fine particles. White phosphorus is a very volatile chemical that reacts with water, our moisture. The skin, because it has so much moisture in it, and the human body has so much water in it, reacts. If you remember your chemistry courses back when you're in high school or college, and there was always the famous little experiment where we took a little tiny sliver, almost a speck, of phosphorus, and we just dropped it into a small pan of water. And you'd think that the 4th of July was happening at that moment. Squirting all over, fizzing, burning. This phosphorus would go up in this almost like a contained, a small explosion, just from a sliver in a little pan of water. Well, what happens with phosphorus is that when they explode it and they integrate it into the air, they make clouds of phosphorus. It is then like a gas. That is, droplets of phosphorus are now dispersed. They go through, you know, and into homes, obviously, under cars, in automobiles, anywhere. If you're a non-combatant and you live in your home and you're not doing any shooting at anybody, but you're just a civilian and in your home in the city of Fallujah, and we set off these phosphorus clouds, these phosphorus bombardments, not only do they start fires, but also the clouds themselves are lethal. And they literally burn off the skin, or melt off the skin is almost a better way. They have a chemical reaction with the skin. And on the recent, in fact, somebody could put up the post on stormfront.org, the town hall section. And by the way, if you'd like to make a post and make any comments or offer any thoughts about some of these issues, please go to stormfront.org and make a post. We've had over a million views now, over 1 million views on the town hall section. And we're having tremendous audiences all over the world. And you have an opportunity to express yourself as well as reading what other people say. And you can email me directly at simply info44@davidduke.com. That's info44@davidduke.com. And I'll be happy to share your ideas and your thoughts over the network, over this worldwide radio broadcast that you're hearing right now, live, worldwide. It's just an amazing process. Well, anyway, back to it. And on Stormfront, in the town hall section, we had a link to the Italian broadcast exposing the American use of white phosphorus in Fallujah. And this use was shown, they even showed the bodies, and they were showing how that for instance, the skin of the hand, in a very gross video, how the skin of the hand had basically come off almost like a plastic glove, and how the skin of the face was simply buckled up away from the body, even though the clothes were still completely intact. Another good example is a man with a bone of his arm exposed, where he's been burned down to the bone, yet his clothes were still relatively intact. Because you see, phosphorus doesn't react with dry substances. It reacts with moisture and water. So it reacts with skin. You couldn't imagine, I imagine, a more excruciating kind of death, and an indiscriminate death, because anyone in that city that would come in contact with this lethal cloud would suffer. if you breathed in this phosphorus fume, in fact, gas masks don't even work because they'll penetrate. And if you breathe in this substance, then it blisters the lung, and you basically, you know, will suffocate to death very rapidly, and also in great pain naturally from these searing burns all over your body. Now, the United States is not supposed to be using chemical weapons. This is a chemical weapon. The United States government at first denied, in fact, that America had used white phosphorus in Iraq. In fact, the American ambassador to Britain wrote a letter to the press in Britain saying that it's just not true. This report's just a lie. There was no white phosphorus used in Fallujah or in Baghdad. Then, finally, government official from the United States has to say, from the Defense Department says, nope, it's true. We used white phosphorus, but we were only targeting the, quote, insurgents. We're only targeting insurgents. Ladies and gentlemen, we're using it in a city. And there are human beings inside that city. And we look at the attack of 9/11 like a horrendous, horrible attack, which indeed it was. Men, women, and children died in this attack. It was probably less on a scale than maybe an attack in someone's apartment buildings or homes where babies would be in their cribs. And at least you could say that there was some sort of military target as far as 9/11 was concerned, in the fact that it's the nexus of a lot of the financial network of the United States of America. When we attacked Baghdad, we attacked even apartment buildings of government leaders. And certainly we looked at any government installation in there as fair game. And these people look at America as a nation with whom they are at war. But the idea of going into a city and putting out this poison, lethal, searing gas, which acts as a gas, white phosphorus, is completely, to me, alien to anything that the United States of America stands for. I'm sorry. This is not what this country stands for. This is not what I grew up believing in as a young man. This is not what I got misty-eyed for when I used to see the American flag as a young boy. This is something that's out of a horror story. It's out of a horror tale. It doesn't seem to be reality anymore, ladies and gentlemen. We shouldn't be in Iraq. We have no interest there. We get absolutely nothing in God's green earth from being there. We don't get any more oil. In fact, we get a bottle of oil from Saddam Hussein, even cheaper. We have hurt the reputation of America throughout the world. We have killed 100,000 civilians while we've told them that we're bringing them freedom. You know, it's hard to be free when you're dead. And we literally have spent $300 billion of our national treasure at a time when many Americans can't even afford health insurance, at a time when so many Americans are going bankrupt and broke for one reason or another in this country. And, of course, we've had a tremendous loss of our own lives and healthy, happy lives of the individuals who've suffered grievous wounds and terrible, crippling, blinding emasculations and maiming that have gone on in this war. Perhaps between 20 and 30,000 Americans have already suffered from these kinds of effects in Iraq. We have basically brought on ourselves another 9/11, ladies and gentlemen, a worse act than 9/11 for those 2,000 and counting American dead and their suffering families back home, and the tens of thousands of those who've been wounded, and the countless billions, in fact, it will be trillions, before the ultimate counting of the cost of this war is finished. And yet it goes on. And it goes on in brutality. It goes on in hate. It goes on with the same kind of morality that the Jewish Trotskyites used in the Soviet Union in the early days when they sent millions to their deaths in the Gulag. It's the same kind of brutality and human disregard for any sort of morality. perhaps I should say inhuman disregard, that sent millions of people in Ukraine to their starvation and deaths. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not America. The idea that we now routinely capture and without trial, without even military tribunal, and we torture people, put electric shocks on their body, drill holes into their backs or their skulls or their arms, put pliers in their body and rip away their skin. The fact that America does this, and the fact that America will not repudiate this by currently, the current Bush administration is saying that he will not support legislation that would outlaw torture by American agencies. At the same time, Bush says, we don't torture. Now, catch that. I mean, everybody now in the world is realizing that the American leadership is nothing but a bunch of liars, oppressors, torturers, murderers. I hate to say it, but it's true. And ladies and gentlemen, what's going on is it's coming to you and me, because the same government that is killing so many of the Iraqis and killing our own troops for nothing but for the interest of Israel, the same government is plotting your demise as well. The same government has opened your borders to non-American citizens who are sweeping into our land and changing the face of our country and making it so that our children will eventually grow up as strangers in their own nation. And the same kinds of people that are doing this are doing it in other nations of the world, many other white nations. And it's incredible what happens. And I want to, again, go back to a story that I wanted to talk about, and I talked about some yesterday, about a hate crime that existed in Toronto, Canada. Now, Toronto, you know, used to be called Good Toronto. Let me quote a letter from you. But first of all, let me talk about what happened a little bit. We now have massive numbers of gangs, non-European gangs in Toronto that roam the streets, that shoot, that kill, that sell dope, that rape, that abuse people, both on the streets and in the schools of the city. Never has Toronto been in the shape that it's in right now. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the great blessing of multiculturalism. They call it the blessing of multiculturalism. Now, in the case that we're talking about here, we had a 16-year-old girl in a school who was basically terrorized by a black gang of 16, all blacks, over a 16-month period. Finally, she was even sexually assaulted by this gang, and including in this gang, by the way, were two black women. Now, the media has been trying to downplay this all the way along. I quoted a letter that was sent to me from one of our friends in Canada, and I quoted, in fact, the article that he quotes from in terms of the details of the case. In fact, how even at the courtroom, the parents of these black gang members and criminals, what were they doing? They were making life a hell on earth for the victims' parents and the victims' family in the courtroom. And the article itself was itself biased. It did talk about the racial aspect in terms of blacks and the white victim, but it itself focused on the poor black criminals, the poor black scions of these individuals. It sure didn't focus on the terror that this white child has gone through, and certainly that other white girls have gone through. They're probably very much afraid now to come forward. And this is another thing that happens all the time. Well, I did a link to that article, and lo and behold, a few hours after I did that link, apparently our website's being read by some websites in Canada and elsewhere, it was changed to, they basically deracialized the article. And then I talked about that, and then they changed that again, and they brought back some racial comments, but they made sure to say that there was no racial aspect of this case, and the police were sure there was no racial aspect of the case. Ladies and gentlemen, just please give me a break. tell me how the media would have viewed it if it had been 16 whites attacking a small black girl, terrorizing her and sexually abusing her in a school. Do you think there may have been a racial angle? I'm going to give you my recent post on DavidDuke.com concerning this. It's called Proof: How the Media Lies and Covers Up the Truth. The next article below deals with the horrendous gang rape and abuse of a young white girl in a school in Toronto, Canada. In it, I reproduced the original article and a link to the original article. You can read the original article below. The article told how 16 blacks over a long period terrorized, threatened, and sexually assaulted a white girl at her school. The article itself was extremely biased. It focused on the claims of black parents that their little gang members were simply victims of racism. There were no poignant reports on the poor girl and her family's reaction to the crimes committed against her. Even that biased article, though, was not enough for the news outlet. It might make people aware of some of the serious downsides to the destruction of our European-American homelands through massive non-European immigration. Toronto is now faced with chronic gang violence and rising sex crimes against women. I linked the article, but guess what? The news site changed the article. You can read the old and new article for yourself. Now in a news piece worthy of Big Brother and Orwell's 1984, it is sure to quote police officials saying that the crime is not in any way related to race. You see, in Canada, you're not entitled to know the racial dynamics of this horrible hate crime. Imagine for just one moment if a gang of 16 whites were arrested for abusing, threatening, and sexually assaulting a young black girl in school. As you know, such a story would not only be hate crime headlines in every newspaper of Toronto, but probably in the front pages of every major daily newspaper in the Western world. Read the article in the post below and then click on the original link that you find for the article that accompanies it. You will see how the link has been changed to a new, sanitized article that completely removes the clear racial component from this hate crime in Canada. Now, this is no exception, my dear friends. This is the rule. The media seeks to instill guilt and shame in white people, indignation and solidarity into blacks. With Europe and North America racked by massive hate crimes against white people and property, the media will not label it as such. That moniker, you see, is reserved for white people and white leaders only. As you know, I'm labeled a racist and hate criminal simply for exposing the racism and hate and manipulation of the media. Massive immigration is nothing more than a massive ethnic cleansing of our people and hate and manipulation of the media. To weaken our resolve, to preserve our heritage, our rights, our security, and our freedom, they ply us with guilt while they hide the barbarism that envelops our societies. Here's a perfect example of that nefarious mechanism at work. A brutal hate crime against a young white girl by non-whites is covered up by a controlled, lying media. Ladies and gentlemen, that's available for you on DavidDuke.com, and you can send that out and get some very good links on some major sites around the country. This is from Luther. This is to info44@DavidDuke.com. Get your emails in, and you can also, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you can go ahead and post on stormfront.org, the town hall section. And, of course, you can hear this program archived on our websites within about 5 or 10 minutes after the program's over. This is from Luther. Dr. Duke, I can appreciate all your efforts to save the white race. I have to wonder, for so many years, what will it take to bring the white population to the struggle of saving our race? It has gone on too long, and just today, one of my closest friends that I've worked long hours and days to help raise has been jumped on and put into the hospital. My friend, Mr. Williams, D. Williams, was jumped on by not one, not two, but six black young men and beaten unconscious. Only due to the help of some Walgreens employees did he get saved. Currently, he cannot remember everything, but this was seen and recorded on tape by surveillance cameras at Walgreens. I watched the TV tonight and never saw anything about how this individual was beaten by this black gang. I'm to the point of wondering when or ever will the white race wake up and take up arms against the tyrannical government that now exists in the United States. After all, is that not what the Second Amendment is all about? We the people? May God save the white race. I'm thinking about learning Russian and moving there to help with the started movement that's already going. I hate to see everything that our forefathers went through just to be handed over to a bunch of so-called, quote, minorities. But this has gone too far. I'm ashamed to say I'm a white American and even fought for this country after how it has treated the white population. I pray God will intervene in some way. Carry on with your work as it's appreciated. Luther, thanks for your letter. And, you know, I understand your feelings. You know, I still love our heritage. And George Washington didn't sell us out. All right. George Bush has sold us out. And the leaders of the Republican Democratic Party have sold us out. But, ladies and gentlemen, the truth is that there are still many Americans in leadership. I suggest you don't move to Russia. I've certainly gone all over the world because I'm helping lead the movement around the world. And I think I offer a lot of political advice to people in Eastern Europe who are just learning the political process. And as American, I can offer a tremendous amount of advice to them. I believe also that I can help them avoid some of the pitfalls of our movement in terms of how to explain our positions concerning the Jewish question and the race questions in a more effective way. And so I'm kind of like Johnny Appleseed traveling the world. But I wouldn't suggest that you move to Russia. I would suggest that you begin to work to organize in your own neighborhood, in your own hometown, in your own village, and you work very hard to turn this country around, the United States of America. It's a vital nation in the multitude of white nations on the earth. And right now, the United Nations is truly something that's controlled by one nation. That's the United States of America. But it's not the United States, ladies and gentlemen, anymore. It's not us that controls us. It's these people who have a commitment to an agenda that's totally alien to the founding values of our country. Let's see here. We've got one. This is a very interesting article, letter. In fact, it just came in from Toronto. It's from Raymond. Dear Dr. Duke, I just read your article about the latest incident in Toronto. You're right on target with your analysis. White Christians have lost control of the government, the courts, the media, and the schools. Anarchy is on the rise. I packed up my family and moved out of the Toronto area just a few months ago. It used to be called Toronto the Good. I'm of British descent, and my ancestors came here almost 200 years ago. In fact, my great-great-great-grandfather, Hugh Black, from Scotland, was the chief surveyor who first put down the city's roads. Would that the, quote, blacks coming to Toronto today were of the same ilk? Gang violence has escalated in recent years. There was a drive-by shooting two blocks from my home in 2003. An innocent girl was killed. Her boyfriend was the intended target. Then a teenager was shot in the back at my daughter's high school in the spring of this year. That's when I sold my home. While we were waiting to move on July 1st, there was another drive-by shooting just 100 yards from our front door. My 12-year-old son was outside playing at the time. He's had nightmares ever since. We moved to a virtually all-white community, 1 hour commute away. Most of my neighbors are now German, which, quite frankly, suits me just fine. I'm back in Canada again, at least for a while. God bless you, Raymond. Thanks, Raymond. And it is really heart-rending to consider what's really happening to our people. And these sons of guns who've sold out our country, both Canada, the United States, and Britain, and France, you know, they literally are responsible for these deaths. They're responsible for this terror. They're responsible for this destruction that goes on around us. They are criminals. And someday, Lord help me, I hope that we'll have the opportunity to take these people and take them to court for their crimes and for their treasons against our people, because they have committed, they have literally authored the genocide, and there's no other way to put it, the genocide of our people. I'm going to go to Stormfront real quickly here and check a couple posts, and then we're going to call today. It's been good to be with you today, ladies and gentlemen, and it seems like every day seems to be a harder day in terms of what's happening to our people. But at the same time, it's a day when people are waking up. Dave Cooper, in fact, shows four leaders who are either imprisoned or threatened with prison right now for hate speech. Myself, David Irving was arrested in Austria, Gamera Rudolph was deported to face prison in Germany, and Siegfried Verbeke, who was extradited to Germany for speech crimes from Belgium. It continues to go on, ladies and gentlemen. It just continues to go on. Free speech, free press, free conscience. Our enemies are absolute hypocrites. Our enemies are repressors. Our enemies are murderers. Our enemies are genocidists. White Bamboo says, Dr. Duke, what's your thoughts about the November 19, 2005 nonviolent, well-organized protest in Kingston, New York? Do you think such protests are beneficial? How can such protests be utilized to help us make effective gains? What are your thoughts on well-organized and public nonviolent rallies run by white liberations that seek to bring multiple white groups together to bring attention to the growing problem of non-white crime? Well, certainly I have no problem with any sort of rally that would go on for our heritage and our culture. I would hope, and I hope very much, that the people who put this rally on represent themselves as the epitome of white civilization and white culture and decency, and not in the stereotypes of the media. If they do that, I would support that meeting. I can't tell you whether it's going to be that way or not. Those of you who want to attend, I'm happy to publicize it, and I think that we should certainly protest when we find our individual members of our race suffer from some of these hate crimes and other actions against our people. There's been a lot of controversy, of course, over Hal Turner and some of the other issues, and there's been a lot of talk about that in some of the threads. I believe pretty much in putting differences aside and coming together. But ladies and gentlemen, I am not, and I don't think any of us should associate with those, right, who are going to speak in a way that fulfills the enemy's lies about us. I know that our movement is not motivated by hatred. I know that our movement is not motivated by any sort of sadistic violence or cruelty, that our movement is motivated by love, that our movement is motivated by reason, that our people are upstanding and decent people. And I would hope anybody who wants to be a leader for the white race and wants to stand up and do a public event, that they conduct themselves in a way at that event that can only redound to the benefit of our heritage and the absolute support of the ideals of our heritage, and not fulfill these Hollywood stereotypes that try to demean us. There, I've announced the rally, and I certainly support people who want to go and take part in it. I see no problem with that, but I will be taking a close look at this rally. I'll look at any speeches or tapes of speeches from this rally, and if I see something that's more representative of Jewish Hollywood imagery, something that Steven Spielberg would produce about what we stand for rather than what we really stand for, I will never support a meeting like that again. So I would say, you know, without knowing enough about it, if it's a demonstration for our heritage, I would suggest supporting it. But I say you've got to keep your eyes and ears open, and if these individuals do not represent our cause effectively and properly and decently, if they fulfill the Steven Spielberg types of stereotypes of our people rather than the ideals that our people truly represent, get yourself away from that meeting as fast as you can, and support those people that will act accordingly and properly. So we'll give them a chance, and I'm supporting the meeting, but I'm going to take a look and see what goes on in that meeting that takes place very soon. ladies and gentlemen, that's about it. I'm gonna call today here with you, and I look forward to being with you again. Well, I'm going to try to be with you again tomorrow. I've got to do some traveling tomorrow. I've got some major speaking engagements coming up, and I'll let you know more about that. Hopefully, we can be in a situation to even offer some of those speeches, either live broadcast or archived, for your interest and enjoyment. And I think it is enjoyable for me to listen to people standing up for our heritage, and it always inspires me to listen to great speakers, for instance, Jared Taylor or Robert Field, Edward Fields, or Kevin Strom, or Don Black, you know, or any of the major leaders for our cause. And David Irving is another one. And my heart right now is with David Irving. It's with Cameron Rudolph. It's with Ernst Sandell. It's with Mr. Becky, who are now all sitting in jail simply for exercising the freedom of speech and conscience concerning issues of history. Thanks so much. I look forward to being with you soon. Bye-bye now.
This has been David Duke for Our Heritage and Our Freedom.